Right now it's time for Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss, and I'm really delighted to be bringing you another edition of Talking Animals, in which we'll discuss manatees and the singular place they occupy in Florida lore with today's guest, journalist author Craig Pittman. Meanwhile, as always, we're kicking off the show with an animal tune. I've had Les Paul on my mind a lot lately, so here's the late, great Les Paul with his version of Chicken Reel here on Talking Animals. Les Paul, with his take on Chicken Reel, an animal tune of sorts, as we use into today's edition of Talking Animals. My name's Duncan Strauss, here with our program that is devoted to all subjects in the animal kingdom. In just a few minutes, we'll be speaking with today's guest, Craig Pittman, the award-winning staff writer for the St. Petersburg Times, and the author, most recently, of Manatee Insanity, Inside the War Over Florida's Most Famous Endangered Species. Find out about manatees and some of the often colorful cast of characters who've worked to protect them in Florida and those who, shall we say, pursued a different agenda. When Craig Pittman joins us in studio, no less, in a few moments here on Talking Animals. And as usual, we'll also welcome your questions and comments at 813-239-9663 or by email at dj@wmnf.org. Right now, it's time for animal news, items, and announcement. I've been talking off and on over the show the last few months about the anti-tethering ordinance that's being proposed, and one woman in particular is working tirelessly on that, and there's yet another meeting. The next Animal Advisory Subcommittee on dog tethering is tonight. So the Hillsborough County Animal Advisory Subcommittee on dog tethering will meet tonight, Wednesday, December 1st at 6:30 p.m. in the second floor boardroom in County Center, 601 East Kennedy Boulevard, downtown Tampa. The public is invited to attend, and each individual who may wish to speak will be provided up to 3 minutes to comment. For more information, call Animal Services at 744-5660. And again, that's obviously dealing with whether dogs should be tied up for hours, sometimes more than hours, outside. And if you have some views on that, you might want to get to this meeting and express them. Also, closer to home, we've got some news that we can finally fully announce as of just a little bit ago this morning. So the second Talking Animals Festival will be held April 3, which we mentioned before. It'll be held 10 a.m. to 4 p.m., which we also mentioned before. But now we can say we'll be back to the glorious Lowry Park, where the band shell is, with all the nice shade and trees, and we'll have bands playing animal songs like before, and we'll have vendors and tablers like before, we'll have food, we'll have all kinds of other cool things going on, speakers, contests, lots of fun, and of course everybody can bring their dogs, bring their, maybe even other animals if they're on a leash, I suppose, we're pretty flexible, but it's for the whole family, it's for your friends, your coworkers, maybe even some of your enemies. And the key thing, perhaps, is that it's free, like the first one. So, anyways, more details on that in the coming days, but we're excited that that's happening, and invite you to mark your calendars for April 3. That's Sunday, April 3rd, 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. at Lowry Park. All right, let's step into the Talking Animals Comedy Corner, which involves animal-oriented comedy. This is Brian Regan with a piece called Animals on today's Comedy Corner here on Talking Animals.
Who knows, man? I lived in New York City for a while before I came out here. My apartment was really small in New York. I had a goldfish and I had to keep him in a shot glass. No, it's okay. A little pebble in there for scenery. So he liked that. He was like, yeah, this is just like the ocean. I like to watch when you try to turn around here. Filtering system might take a straw. It's like a jacuzzi room. Oh, yeah. I think people are unfair to their pets, you know? Like putting a pet bird in a cage. That's pretty nice, huh? Get in there, Clank. Shut up. I'll be making the decisions. I was wondering what a bird's thinking, standing in a cage. Hey, thank you. Hey, I've been blessed with the gift of flight. Appreciate the environment. I know how to fly. I'm standing on a stack. Hey, I've already read these newspapers. fact, I've whited out some typos.
All right, that's Brian Regan with a portion of a piece called Animals, taken from his CD, simply entitled Live. I'm Duncan Strauss. This is Talking Animals. Our website is talkinganimals.net, where we make available all sorts of information, as well as archives and podcasts of past Talking Animals programs. We also have a link to the Talking Animals Facebook page. Like us already, will you? And our Twitter page. Please follow us. Plus, there's a place to subscribe to our email newsletter so we can keep you posted on forthcoming guests, program news, and more. That's all found at talkinganimals.net. It's nearly time to speak with today's guest, Craig Pittman. So let me outline a few things about him. As I mentioned earlier, he's an award-winning staff writer for the St. Petersburg Times, who since 1998 has covered environmental issues for the paper. He's also the author, most recently, of Manatee Insanity, Inside the War Over Florida's Most Famous Endangered Species. The book is notable for its uncommon achievement in both breadth and depth. Florida Humanities Council added Manatee Insanity to its list of essential Florida books. Among the others on that list, Ernest Hemingway's To Have and Have Not. It's quite a book, quite a story, or stories maybe, so much to discuss, with a reminder that we invite you to join the conversation by calling 813-239-9663 or emailing dj@wmnf.org. Let's welcome Craig Pittman to Talking Animals, in studio, no less. Hi, Craig.
Good morning, Duncan. How you doing?
I'm doing really well and so happy to have you not only talking about this book, but talking across from me. I never get to see the guest in person. It's so cool. So thank you, thank you, thank you.
You're welcome.
So if someone said to you, Manatee Insanity is the definitive historical account of the battles fought in Florida for and against the manatee, how would you react to that statement?
I'd say, well, holy cow, you actually read the book. Thank you.
Who said it was me?
Oh, who said?
No, yeah. But
well, that's what I was going for. It's such a wild and woolly story, and it very entertaining as well as I think thought provoking. So that's I was trying to capture that.
And with that in mind, maybe we could talk a little bit about the larger motivation behind the book. I mean, it's one thing to be a Florida native, as you are, and it's another thing to spend a dozen years or so on the environmental beat of Florida's largest newspaper, the St. Petersburg Times. And manatees are pretty darn interesting, no matter sort of who you are or where you are. But deciding to write any kind of book is a, you know, serious commitment. And so I can't help feeling there must have been some sort of major event, major catalyst, something prompts you to say, okay, I'm not going to try to write a book. I'm going to write a book about manatees. And by the way, I want to write the definitive historical account of the manatee situation in Florida. So.
Well, it's in the time I've spent covering environmental issues in Florida, there has been no issue as divisive as the issue of manatee protection. I mean, people are, you know, pretty much one way or the other, and there's no room for compromise. It's almost like, you know, it's not to the same extent, but it's almost like covering abortion or you know, something like that. And so wherever you have that kind of passion on either side, that obviously makes for a good story.
Yeah. So that was as much what you identified as, hey, there's a big battle, there's an mm-hmm. ongoing battle, and let me jump in and try to chronicle this thing.
And plus there are all kinds of wacky things going on along the way, interesting little subplots, interesting characters. I mean, you know, any story where you can incorporate Jacques Cousteau and O.J. Simpson, that's a pretty good story.
No, right. No, the cast of characters is and even spanning not just that kind of range, but historically. I mean, just as a relatively, you know, recent transplant to Florida, just, reading about Flagler, for example. Mm-hmm. And it's like, well, I drive on Flagler, but I didn't really know that much about him as mm-hmm. I probably should have. And, so just like seeing, but also how far back the pertinent issues of the manatee battle
right.
really go to
oh, yeah.
when that guy was sort of laying down his tracks, as it were. And, so, yeah, no, it's just
I learned stuff, too. I mean, I didn't know that as early as 1884, scientists were already saying, you know, we're kind of worried about the manatees. We're worried they're about to vanish from the earth. It's like, wow, that far back. So.
Yeah, I mean, in fact, you know, by the time I was at the sort of the final pages of this book, that reminds me, I couldn't decide if this was like a sprawling, complicated story with an inexhaustible supply of those colorful, or dull characters in some cases, spanning more than a century, or one simple story that sort of just essentially kind of recurs, you know, every generation or so with an interchangeable kind of cast of pretty, much the same characters. There's, you know, the people that want you, you know, to slow down, the people that don't want to slow down, the people who meanwhile want to develop stuff. And I mean, so did you find that, like, wow, this is like over those generations, if you're talking about the 1800s and now we're, you know, 2010, I mean, was it notably different in any of those areas for you, or was it like, wow, this story just kind of chugs along, but a few people change and a few elements change, but not really the...
I think it's both. Mm-hmm. Not to play the role of Billy Martin here and feel strongly both ways, but sure. I think the thing is that the issues regarding manatees have changed from the 1800s. I mean, obviously then they didn't have motorboats running around, and they didn't have lots of marina construction going on the waterfront and that kind of thing. But the continuing issue, I think, for Floridians is always going to be, how much do we treasure the gift that we've been given of this marvelous natural beauty that we have, and what do we do with it? Is it worth saving at all costs, or are there things we're willing to sacrifice in order to make some money and make a living, and in order to make this a hospitable place for us to live? And how do you balance that? How do you work out something where you try and achieve both goals at the same time, and is that even possible?
Yeah.
And so, I mean, that's kind of been, to me, the story of Florida all along is, you know, how do we live here? How do we, how do we cope with it? How do we grab for what can make us a success and yet not let go of the things that brought us here in the first place?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The ongoing sort of battle that manatees or no manatees that we faced.
Plus, of course, there was funny stuff to write about too.
My God. Well, we'll get into some of that, rest assured. So, this is Talking Animals. If you just tuned in, we're speaking with Craig Pittman, staff writer with the St. Petersburg Times, whose latest book is Manatee Insanity. We invite you to join the conversation by calling 813-239-9663 or, emailing us at dj@wmnf.org. So part of, I mean, it is a big sprawling story, as you say. I mean, we've already touched on it in the 1800s, and here we are, 2010. But the book to me also is notable, you know, beyond that, in all kinds of ways, really. Not least that there's just striking sort of, as I said earlier in the introduction, breadth and depth. I mean, I saw where someone said the book was sort of marked by tour de force reporting. Okay, that was me, but still. But, you know, really, I mean, for you was like, there's, you know, because you're a reporter or otherwise, did you really feel like, you know, just doing a really good job or getting a couple of good slices of this, just, that's just not going to work for me. I've got to really dig in every step of the way, every generation, every era. I mean, was that kind of the driving thing? Is like, hey, well, what else? Because,
well,
it seems like,
yeah, and I think the interesting, for me, the standard for a good story is when you think it's just about as weird as it can get, it gets weirder.
Yeah.
And that was the case with the manatee story. You know, I went into it thinking, okay, I pretty much know how this is going to go, and I started digging into some of the history and went, I didn't know that. Wow, that's interesting.
What were a couple of bigger surprises that
historically, that the very first law passed to protect manatees was sponsored by a guy who was South Florida's first real estate mogul and was an avid boater himself, for a guy named Frederick Morse, one of the founders of Miami. I mean, that was just a interesting revelation, and that would happen in 1893, not that long ago, but still before Miami was even a city.
Right.
So, and then, you know, just sort of the role of some of the scientists in working on this, discovering, you know, hey, we can identify one manatee from the other based on the pattern of boat injuries they suffered, the scars on their hides. You know, like one of them said, you know, like fingerprints that were carved out by a buzzsaw. You know, that was a really fascinating thing to find out, and that discovery in 1949 is something that they're still using today. Now the SCAR catalog, as they call it, is a computerized database, but they're still using that same method.
Yeah, which of course I thought was both simultaneously sad and ingenious at the same time when I read about that in your book. But, you know, it makes sense when you think about it.
Sure.
I mean, it's kind of awful to think about in a way. But, I mean, yeah, I guess nobody gets hit by the propeller exactly the same way,
the same number of times.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's a way to take something bad and turn it into a positive, which has also kind of been sort of one of the themes here as well, that they, because of that SCAR catalog, they have a greater understanding of this species than any other marine mammal species on Earth.
Yeah. Well, that's the other thing, too, is that, that throughout the book and throughout the, you know, the period that the book's looking at, as you kind of alluded to, I mean, there's some really interesting scientific work that's done, and people who migrate from other fields. Like, for example, the guy who sort of did a lot of the key work in, like, figuring out how to count the population.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it just seems like because, again, it just seems like a one through line here is that people of all kinds and even with all agendas are really drawn to, you know, manatees in one capacity. They want to work mm-hmm. with them. They want to figure them out. They want to help them. They don't really want to help them, want to help figure out how to not help them, you know. But, I mean, there's like a weird drive, like, throughout, you know, just endless characters. And part of the thing, well, let's looks like we've got some folks here. Let's take a call and get other people involved in the conversation. Hi, you're on WNF on Talking Animals with Craig Pittman.
Yeah, Craig, how you doing?
Hi, how's it going?
Well,
I think we may or may not have lost you. You sound like you're in a tough cell spot. Are you still there? Oh, all right. He may call back. All right. So, well, one thing, speaking of some of the more amusing things that are laced throughout the book, I mean, anytime you have a serious-minded historical account that includes a guy in a gorilla suit, seems like it's essential to address the guy in the gorilla suit. Maybe you could tell us a little bit about the guy in
well,
the gorilla
that,
suit.
That was in a chapter on the difficulty that they have enforcing the laws on manatee protection. And one of the guys, in that chapter, there has been one case in history, just one, where a guy actually went to jail for killing a manatee. And the investigator who worked that case had a previous brush with fame where he dressed up as in a gorilla suit in order to serve as the bait, I guess you'd say, in an undercover operation to catch a guy who was trying to buy a gorilla on the black market for a zoo in Mexico. And the bust went through, and then the guy said, "Okay, I can step out of the cage now." And when he stepped out of the cage, still in costume, the Mexican zoo official freaked out and tried to jump out of the airplane.
Well, that shows you what a convincing portrayal it really was. Yeah, that guy should get kudos for his gorilla work, I'd say. Yeah. So, again, this is Talking Animals. We're speaking with Craig Pittman, whose latest book is Manatee Insanity. If you'd like to ask Craig a question, offer a comment, please call 813-239-9663. Something I was just getting at before when we tried to take that call. I mean, there is something kind of enchanting, irresistible, maybe even mystical about manatees.
They have that effect on people.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, what is that? I mean, as just a guy or a longtime Floridian, or as a guy who wrote this book, or if you want to answer in both ways, if there's slightly different answers, I mean, what is that?
Well, I think it's because they have such an unusual appearance, and because they're non-threatening, and they're also, you know, the endangered species that's in our backyard. I mean, you don't see an endangered species that often. You don't see Florida panthers and so forth, but manatees, they're right there. You can go see them during cold weather like this. You can go over to the Tico plant in Apollo Beach and go stand on the dock there and see 70 to 100 of them gathered up in the warm water outfall. It's just an amazing sight to see. I took my kids over there one winter day, and they said, "Dad, this is cooler than video games." So
that is a rave review. Yes. Yeah, boy, that's and before you started the book, did they have that kind of impact on you? I mean, whether or not that was cooler than the video game part, but I mean, just that sort of mystical kind of impact.
Well, I'm more, as I mentioned in the book, I'm fascinated by the people who are fascinated
right,
by manatees.
Right.
I just think the effect that they have on people is interesting to watch. For instance, I tell the story in the book that not once but twice at Homosassa Springs State Park, they've had incidents where elderly visitors were so entranced by seeing manatees that they leaned over and went, "Aw," and their dentures fell in the water.
Yeah, that's it's sort of giving over yourself all the way to a manatee.
That sort of tooth-dropping awe is,
right.
is something that I just find fascinating.
For sure. All right, well, let's. This may be the original caller. Hi, you're on Talking Animals with Craig Pittman.
Hello?
Hello. You're on the air with Craig Pittman.
Oh, hi there. This is a great conversation. I just wanted to ask Mr. Pittman, and I look forward to reading your book, but how do you feel about people swimming with the manatees? I notice a lot of these things are going on over there in Homosassa. And does that bother them, or...?
That's a really good question. The only place in the country where you can actually swim with the manatees and touch them and so forth is at Crystal River. And that's because they started doing that practice before the Endangered Species Act was passed.
Grandfathered in then?
Yes, they're grandfathered in. And it's been controversial. There have been lots of incidents where some of the tour boat folks have gone, pardon the pun, gone overboard with manatees. Where in one instance, one of the tour boat operators actually grabbed a baby manatee and swung it around so it could pose for a picture for the tourists with the cameras, and then turned it loose to swim back to its mother. And some activists who were in Crystal River who have been upset about this stuff filmed that and put it on YouTube and said, see Fish and Wildlife Service, you need to shut this stuff down.
Yeah.
And the tour boat folks say, hey, it's just some bad apples. You know, don't shut us all down. If you do that, you'll ruin the cause of manatee education and manatee conservation, not to mention the economy of Crystal River. So it's been a real source of conflict. On the other hand, as the tour boat folks point out, it is a way for people to really connect with this creature in a way they can anywhere else. And they can actually see them up close, see how docile they are, how gentle. And it makes an impression that you never forget.
And let me thanks so much for the call. But let me actually take it even a step further philosophically, perhaps, from the caller's question is, is there sort of a view of that? I mean, let's put it this way. When there's swim with dolphin programs, or people who do that and love that and says that's kind of a cool connection. I mean, there's a lot of people who, you know, care about dolphins and dolphin welfare who would say you should never swim with dolphins.
Right.
So is that comparable in the manatee world or?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, it's a question of, you know, how habituated do you want to make them to people, number one. But the other thing, too, is manatees are classified as an endangered species. And other places, you know, around the state, I'm sure would love to have these kind of tour operators, except that touching manatees is classified as harassment.
Anywhere other than
Crystal River. And
wow.
So it's illegal.
Okay.
So, you know, then you look at, okay, well, if it's illegal everywhere else, how come it's legal in this one place just because they did it before the law was passed? You know, how do you reconcile those things? Is it harassment or is it not?
Right. Wow. Okay. So that is sounds like very much a parallel to the
sure.
Interesting. You alluded a bit ago to, you know, it's obviously getting colder here, and I heard this morning coming in that tomorrow with wind chill could be in the mid 30s or thereabouts. Mm-hmm. So what might nearby manatees do or be doing now in response to the chilly temperatures?
They're probably already headed for the warm water outfalls. They'll be headed for springs, for instance, in Sulphur Springs. There's a boil that comes up in the river there where they like to hang out. Obviously the ones that people know about the most are the power plants, because the manatees are attracted there by the warm water that flows out from the power plants. And you'll see, you know, 100 or so of them gathered around in some of those areas. And that's why that's a good time for the biologists to take to the air and fly around and try and count them. And contain their nausea as they circle 16 times with the, you know, standing on the wing.
that came up a few times in the book, obviously, that the counting and the nausea. Mm-hmm. So are they always kind of the people who do that counting at the ready, so that if a cold snap comes in quickly, boom, they're ready
they're watching the weather, and they're looking for specific
patterns.
If it's a cold snap that's going to be over in a day or two, no, they don't deal with that. But if
right.
it's going to last
Sustained.
For a little while, and then they're looking for a sunny day, because on a sunny day, the manatees would tend to come to the surface and to warm themselves. That makes it easier for them
to
count.
Nice
so those are the ideal sort of circumstances for them.
And with this sort of movement that's happening now because of the cold weather, I mean, what sort of different precautions, in theory at least, should local boaters, you know, think about making?
Well, I mean, obviously obey all the posted speed zones and so forth, but just keep your eyes peeled. I mean, you'll see the noses come up out of the water every 5 minutes or so, and you'll see that kind of boil that occurs whenever they go back down when they flip their fluke. So just be aware that they're moving and
right.
they're out there, and they're liable to be more of them seeking refuge, seeking those warm
right
water
now.
Areas right now. So if
yeah.
you're, say, in Apollo Beach, look out, you know,
around Wheaton Island.
Around Wheaton Island, be careful, you know.
Right. Well, Craig, we're sort of nearing our final moments here, believe it or not, of our chat here. But, and again, we're speaking with Craig Pittman, whose latest book is Manatee Insanity. And we do have a couple minutes left, so if someone does want to offer a question or a comment for Craig, 813-239-9663, or you can email us at dj@wmnf.org. Now, I know that Manatee Insanity has been out for a number of months. I'm sort of a little bit late to the party, but I'm glad I got to the party.
We'll give you a paper hat, I promise.
Okay, good. No, I'm just glad we were able to discuss it, because really, I for anyone interested in you know, the whole manatee, well, manatees at all, but the manatee situation in Florida, I mean, it's you know, the way that you're, like, inside these scenes that you tell them, I mean, again, as I said about the tour de force reporting, it's just like, oh, my God, the details and what's being said and some of the crazy behavior that's going on from some of our highest elected officials, amongst others.
Well, I mean, that was one of the things that kind of intrigued me, too, is it showed very vividly that science embraces ambiguity. Scientists love to have ambiguous answers. You know, for instance, the flying around counting the manatees on cold days, they always say, look, we don't know if that's an exact number. It's not an exact number. It's a minimum number. There's probably other manatees we missed. But politicians and the law, they require certainty. And so everybody was looking at those numbers they were producing and saying, that's it. There are exactly 1,227 manatees, or however many they counted that particular day. And then the next year they might count 2,000 and say, oh, and all the politicians say, oh, look, there are more manatees now. We can back off all the protections. Well, no, that just means the counting circumstances
right.
were better. And, you know, and
yeah. but what is different now?
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly. But a lot of the science, a lot of the scientific background, a lot of the scientific embrace of ambiguity completely lost in the rush towards, okay, do we have an answer or do we not have an answer? Give me an answer.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And again, which reminds me, too, that political figures, you know, I mean, just even with the way we're sort of introduced to the young Charlie Crist and, you know, I guess he doesn't traffic quite as much in sort of the simple cliche phrases as he did in those days, perhaps. But, and of course, Jimmy Buffett runs throughout the book, and
sure.
There's just so many great people, but a lot of people, most of us at least, haven't heard of that are as pivotal, you know, to the
oh, sure.
story as any of those folks and others. But, well, let's try to squeeze in one more call. We're sort of gilding the lily here, but let's try. Hi, you're on Talking Animals with Craig Pittman.
Duncan, hi. This is Benny from Land O'Lakes. How are you, Craig?
Good. How about you? Question
Thanks.
For Craig?
Yes, two questions and then a little anecdote if you get time.
Oh, we don't have time for – I can already tell you we don't have time for all that, but one quick question would be great. Pick your best question.
Well, why would any politician be against protection of manatees? Why would any – the regulations?
Well, the argument was that the regulations were going too far, that the manatees didn't require that much protection, and that they were actually impacting people's property rights. And in fact, the opening scene of the book takes place at a big public hearing where 3,000 people showed up to complain about some new regulations on dock building, and one guy actually brought a 12-foot-high cross that was labeled property rights. So people feel very strongly about, hey, the government shouldn't be telling me where I can build or what I can build. I ought to be able to build docks in my backyard. And you know, one woman actually said that this manatee creature is infringing on my habitat. So that was the position that a lot of folks were taking. And frankly, the boating industry and the waterfront development industry both make very large campaign contributions. So, of course, politicians listen to those.
Is it easier for manatees to feed in the winter or in the summer, in the colder months or in the summer months?
I think it would be harder in the winter because if they're all clumped up together, they're all going after the same food source.
Right.
So, in the summertime, obviously it would be better. And, one scientist I talked to suggested that that's actually their purpose in life, is to sort of help regulate and help spread the seagrass beds that are so essential to, marine life in Florida.
Thank you so much, caller, for your great questions. Okay, Craig. Well, gosh, we are sort of at the end of the time. Quickly, though, like I was starting to say, I know Manatee Insanity has been out for a while and that you've been feverishly at work on already the next book, which I
yes.
believe you're putting the finishing touches on.
Yes,
so,
I sent it off to the publisher yesterday.
Well, congratulations.
Thank
and
you.
Can you just tell us a little bit? I think you said in the message that it's about plants.
It's about orchid smuggling.
Wow.
The very strange world of orchid smuggling, strange but very high finance world of orchid smuggling, and It's about a specific case out of Sarasota.
Cool. When might we look for that on the...
Probably around the Mayan apocalypse of 2012, I think.
Okay, cool. All right. Well, Craig, thanks again. We've been speaking with Craig Pittman. You probably read his stuff if you're around the area in the St. Petersburg Times. The book is Manatee Insanity, Inside the War Over Florida's Most Famous Endangered Species. There's a website, manateeinsanity.com, and a Facebook page, I believe.
Yes, Facebook fan page.
Mm-hmm. Right. So, Craig, thanks so much for making the time to not only join us today on Talking Animals, but join us in the studio, which, again, we're always extra excited about.
Thanks for inviting me.
All right. So I'm Duncan Strauss. You are listening to Talking Animals, where the show website is talkinganimals.net. It's time to proceed to Name That Animal Tune. There'll be a prize, a Talking Animals Festival T-shirt from last year's festival, to the first person who calls 813-239-9663 and correctly identifies this animal tune. It's Name That Animal Tune on Talking Animals. We're starting to give it away there. We've just about reached the end of today's edition of Talking Animals. Currently, the program airs twice a month, specifically the first and second Wednesday of each month. So we'll return next Wednesday, December 8th. I hope you'll join me then. Talking Animals broadcast outreach consultant is Libby McKenna, who, despite having a beautiful baby girl just a few weeks ago, is in the studio today shooting video and helping us out. My thanks to her. I'm Duncan Strauss. Thanks very much for listening. Have a good week. Be kind to animals. Be kind to others. Be kind to yourself. We're closing out today's show, as always, with an animal tune, a nod to Craig's book. This is Eric Stone with the Manatee and the Jellyfish on WMNF Tampa. Thanks for listening.
Sitting on my friend's sailboat, watching a jellyfish float. Wind controls his life and where he goes. That makes me start to think my friend's just like that invertebrate, 'cause it chases wind no matter where it blows. And then I see a manatee whose life is ruled by destiny. Danger that he faces from a prop. And then it occurs to me, my life's just like that manatee's. I wanna get there, but there's danger at the top. When God made us, he threw away the mold. No two will ever be the same. Ain't right, I am off.